This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and happy Sunday to all you Hoosier fans. Thanks for joining us on the Hoosier Huddle podcast, the postgame show for IU at Northwestern. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. TJ Inman will be along with us shortly. We'll go over the game at Northwestern. It was an ugly display of IU football on offense. The defense really played well in the second half, held Northwestern to 37 yards, but this was a concerning loss for me in the manner of how they lost, also body language and some quotes after the game were concerning as well. So we'll get TJ's thoughts on that as well when he joins us. But, you know, Indiana's now 3-4 facing a test in Maryland next week at home. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. As always, it's a pleasure to be on, even though we are now facing the unfortunate reality of a losing streak. I mean, it's something we're used to as Indiana football fans, but I do think that we've reached a portion now of the schedule where it's not mathematically must win, but realistically, we've reached the portion of the schedule where it's now must win if you are going to get back to a bowl game and achieve the goal that I think all of us had at the start of the season.
Yeah, and coming up, it is a must win, and I think not only for bowl game, I think they need to right the ship. After the game yesterday, we were talking to Mitchell Page, and he said, you know, and I quote, it's just kind of the same things that have been happening. In critical situations, we're getting a penalty or not making a play we need to make. We've got to find a way this week, even if it's something as simple as going to class. We need to do everything that winners do this week. That I cringe at that quote when he said it. It's, you know, last year this unit was so tight-knit. You know, it was – the chemistry in the locker room was great. And you know, they got off to a fast start, 4-0 start last year. Kind of the same thing. They went on a extended six-game losing streak and then came back to win the final two. So it's kind of the pattern that's following this year. But you could see the seams kind of starting to break in the locker room. You know, I don't know if who's skipping class or whatever, but for Mitchell Page to call out people for what seems to be not going to class and not doing the little things that winning teams do has reached a frustration level that is basically critical mass. And you could see it on the field too. I think in the fourth quarter, Lego missed Ricky Jones in the end zone on a kind of corner comeback route. And Ricky Jones, you just see he's so frustrated and, you know, looking up at the sky and waving his hands and stuff like that. So it was a frustrating loss, and we'll see what this team is made out of coming up next week against a Maryland team who's better than we thought. Probably, and is coming off a win in prime time against Michigan State, who has fallen off the face of the earth. But you know they're going to come in, try and run the ball, and have some speed. But to me, this loss is concerning, just based on body language after the game, maybe some of the comments as well. But you know, the defense played well. If you want to take one of the bright spots, they held Northwestern to 37 yards in the second half, which is unbelievable. I had to double-check the stats to make sure. But the offense has got to get something going. And whether or not – I don't think it was solely on the play calling yesterday, although some of the play calling was was head scratching in terms of, you know, rolling Lego out in the red zone at the 5 yard line with limited space anyway. He's not going to run it. So you take away half the field. Some of it was execution. There was a 4th-and-3, I think, or 4th-and-2, and Mitchell Page is running a crossing route at 1 yard deep, and he hits him for no gain. You know, and then some of it's execution on Lego's part. A lot of those deep passes, they were open. I mean, that pass to Timmy, where the guy made a great interception. Timmy had 2 or 3 steps on him, and a throw, you know, a good throw. And Timian is likely inside the 15, if not with a touchdown. And then on the play where the Northwestern defender made an unbelievable one-handed flying interception, if that ball is thrown a little bit more inside the hash marks, you know, Ricky Jones is there for big play. So to me, you know, and they continue to run Divine Redding to the outside when they don't have the blocking to block that play, and Divine does not have the speed to hit whatever hole is there for the limited amount of time it is. And you know, going back, we've been calling for it since, you know, week 2. Get Devontae Williams the ball. You know, he averaged 10.5 yards a carry. He had over 100 yards of all-purpose yards yesterday. Get this guy the ball in space. And let him do some work. But other than that, it was just a dismal, frustrating game to watch.
I would agree with that. And it was kind of an odd one because we dealt with the reality of a loss. We kind of felt that from like 12:30 on. The way that the game began at 14-0 Northwestern and Indiana going 3 and out to begin the game on, I think, 3 straight drives, it really felt as if it was going to be an incredibly long day. And I give credit, like you said, to the defense, which in years past, I'm not sure what
the
score would have been.
They went 3 and out in the first 2 drives.
Okay. Yeah, with a start like that, in years past, I'm not sure what the score would have been, but it Northwestern would have been in the 50s in years past because the defense would have folded up shop and just gotten their doors blown off. But really, after that, after the first drive of the second quarter, which was done mostly in the first quarter, they got Northwestern to 21 when they hit Macon Harris for a nice, very nice pass. And I'll give credit to Clayton Thorson because he played the first, like, 18 minutes of that game and looked like the best quarterback in the country. I mean, he was amazing. And Indiana's defense had something to do with that, no question. But he did a really nice job. So I have to give him credit for his start. But after that, probably 17 minutes or so, Northwestern only really had one even remotely successful drive, and that got them to 24 right before the half. So I give credit to the defense. I give credit to the special teams coverage units. Ricky Jones had a blocked punt. So that's Indiana's second blocked punt of the season. And I thought they did a very nice job covering Northwestern's return game. And Devontae Williams did a pretty solid job returning kicks as well. So credit there to those two units. And I liked the red script Indiana helmets. So
yes,
that's the positive portion of the podcast. For me, that's the positive portion of the podcast. That's the list, really. Beyond that, it was not good. I am giving, for any optimism that I have, and I do think Indiana's going to play well against Maryland on Saturday. I don't know what the result's going to be, but I feel like they're going to play well. I don't know why I feel that way. I'm typically not all that optimistic when teams are on losing streaks, but I just have a feeling Indiana's going to have a good week and play well on Saturday. And part of that, I think, is due to I've seen this program, not this team, but this program in general, deal with a losing streak and deal with, you know, having their backs to the wall if they want to make a bowl game and coming up with victories. I've seen that happen just last year. This is a very similar situation to what they dealt with going into the final two games of last season. And I feel like they can get this done. Doesn't mean they're going to, but I'm predicting and hoping that that they start turning around Saturday. And for me, the biggest, most concerning thing that we'll be able to see right away is the starts that Indiana's getting off to. You mentioned it to me in text message there in the game. It's another very slow start. And you're absolutely right. I mean, it's almost a weekly occurrence now. Yeah, it's almost a weekly occurrence now where Indiana's digging themselves into a hole, and that does a couple of things. Number one, whatever offensive game plan you might have had, it's going to affect that. And number two, it's going to make it incredibly difficult for your defense the rest of the way, because they're going to have their backs against the wall to where they know we've got to get a stop because we can't afford to fall back anymore. It's very frustrating to watch because you right away get put into a negative state of mind, and I'm sure the players feel it too, where you're kind of thinking, not here we go again. I don't feel that, but you're wondering why on earth are we down double digits to start a game again. It's a really concerning thing, and Indiana's not going to be able to do that against Maryland, who loves to run the ball, get behind on them, and they can effectively kill the clock off with the way that their offense operates. So it's really concerning. They've got to get it turned around. The second biggest thing is turning scoring chances into points. We've talked about it. I feel like we talked about it all offseason. It's continued to be a problem so far this year. They're getting scoring chances, not as quite as many as you'd like, but they are getting scoring chances, and they're just not converting them to points. There's not a whole lot of quicker ways to lose football games. Turnovers, which continue to be a problem, and not converting scoring chances into points. That's a really easy way to lose games to teams you're somewhat close to in skill level.
Yep.
I mean, you can look at just look at the drive chart. I mean, they started at the at their own 47, had first and 10, or first and goal from the Northwestern 3, ended up in a field goal. Couldn't get a yard. They blocked punt.
I forget what plays did they run on that drive? Because I remember one incomplete pass. I forget. Was there a run
I think
to
they
Redding
ran it
that
one.
Got stuffed?
Run to Redding that got stuffed. They had the pass to Ricky Jones that sailed out of bounds. And then I think they booted him and tried to get Ian Thomas open, and he wasn't open. And he threw it away or threw it into the ground or something.
They roll out Nady on that as well, where it was Nady and Thomas were two routes that were pretty close to each other. So it was covered both of them.
Either they didn't execute the routes right, or it's just not a good play call. That they got to change something. And this is where you're missing Jordan Fuchs and Simi Cobbs, two of your bigger receivers, who you could throw a fade ball to and make a catch.
But they don't throw the ball to Danny Friend in the end zone. So what? I mean,
that's true.
Danny Friend's a big guy. He's got pretty good hands, as far as we know, but he never gets targeted. So I don't know what they're looking for in the red zone. I don't know.
Yeah, so it just baffles me. So that it was 14-0 at the time. You settle for three, and then I think from there it's 21-3, 24-3, and then the biggest play to me once again is the punt block. I believe they started at the around midfield.
49, I think.
Yeah, the 48 or 49, and they couldn't get anything going. Again, that's a time where I believe it was 24-6, and you have a shot to get in the end zone early in the third quarter and put some pressure on Northwestern. Instead, you have a short pass. I think a short pass and some, you know, a run and basically you get nothing. It's you get absolutely nothing. And
that was a four and out.
Yeah, that, you know, you turn it over on downs. I'm looking at the play-by-play now. So Indiana took over at their own 48, passed for 6 yards to Ricky Jones. So second and four, okay, you got, you know, that's you're ahead of the chains. You're in good position. Run Devine Redding for a yard. Run Devine Redding for a yard. Pass incomplete on fourth and two. It's, you know, that's – so be aggressive. I know Lego hasn't thrown the ball deep downfield all that well, but be aggressive. And this is something that Matt Weaver and I talked in the car on the way back was when you win the toss, Indiana needs to be the aggressor. They need to come out and punch somebody in the mouth instead of, you know, deferring to the second half, playing like you're a 30-point underdog and playing for the second half. Come out, take the ball, show teams that you're going to move it down the field, down their throat, have some confidence in yourself and really, you know, do some damage instead of playing it passive and deferring to the second half, letting Northwestern get out to a 7-0, 14-0 lead and really it changes the dynamic of, A, your game plan, B, your play calling, and C, you know, the mentality of your team. This, yep. It is the mindset of the Indiana football program and the Indiana fan base is so mentally weak. And I get it. It's the same with Cubs fans. And you saw it last night, if you watched the game, is that everybody was so nervous. And it was 5-0 in the ninth inning with one out. And you'd have to think that the first thing going through their minds is, oh, my God, how are we going to blow this? Look, I'm happy the Cubs won, and hopefully, you know, they have confidence now that, hey, we've done it, we can do it again, and stuff like that. But Indiana's got to be aggressive. They can't play this. It's Northwestern. You guys are two-point underdogs going into the game. You're not going into Tuscaloosa against Alabama. You're not going to the Horseshoe against Ohio State. It's Northwestern. It's an 11 a.m. game. Take the ball, move the ball downfield, give your fans something to cheer about. There were a lot of IU fans in the crowd yesterday, and that's something that they pointed out on the radio call. There were a lot of IU fans. Give them something to cheer about. Take the ball. Maybe Devontae Williams breaks a big run. Maybe get on the board first with a touchdown. But to give Northwestern the ball, and one of the keys to the game was to get off to a fast start. You give Northwestern the ball, they march downfield and look like, you know, the 1999 Rams moving downfield and scoring touchdowns. And you basically take all the air out of your balloon. And, you know, that's got to have some psychological effect on the players. Now, to their credit, Tom Allen pumped up that defense. They shut him out in the second half, allowed 37 yards, gave the offense a chance. You know, and if you told me that multiple chances, but if you told me going in at Northwestern would score 24 points, I think IU would win.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. So I think coming out against Maryland, you're going to have to be the aggressor. If you win the toss, take the ball. Whatever crowd is there, you gotta get them excited.
Yeah, I agree with the overall mindset of being aggressive. I agree with that. I didn't really have an issue with the play calling much yesterday. There were a couple of play calls that I scratched my head at and a couple that I, you know, was vocally disgruntled with. But for the most part, I thought the offensive play calling was perfectly fine. There was more vertical passing than there had been against Nebraska. I was pleased to see that. For me, most of the offensive issue, particularly on multiple big plays missed, was on, I think it was on the quarterback.
It was execution on the quarterback.
Yeah, a couple of them were on, there were a couple of drops, particularly in the first half, that hurt drives. or not necessarily drops, but balls that certainly could have been caught but weren't. That occurred a couple of times, but for the most part, the issue was balls being either overthrown or underthrown. I would say the biggest issue with Richard Legault right now, number one, is going to be just consistency in his passing. And number two, I don't think the offense is sure of itself at all right now. You can see it in Kevin Wilson having to take he's having to take multiple timeouts because plays are taking – I don't know. They're taking too long to get in. Richard Legault's not changing at the line fast enough, not signaling at the line fast enough. The variety of issues. I don't know if there's one specific thing.
I think there were three timeouts yesterday that were
timeouts.
Because of that.
Yeah, and I do not know what the exact issue is with that. I don't know. But what it results in is Indiana is not able to move at a quick tempo on offense anymore. We have very rarely this season seen Indiana use a tempo attack to get a defense on its heels and keep going at them until they're in the end zone. We have barely ever seen that this year, and it's something we saw constantly last season. Part of that, it's either a lack of trust with Richard Legault from the coaching staff. They don't think he can handle that, and maybe they're right. I mean, they see it every day of practice. We don't, so maybe they're right. Or number two, it's a lack of Richard Legault being able to get the offense to operate that quickly. Or number three, I guess it's that they just the coaching staff doesn't want to do it because they for some reason think it's more effective to shorten the game. I don't know, but we have very rarely seen a tempo attack, and I think just it translates to me as the offense lacking confidence in what they're capable of doing. And that's how it translates on in person or on TV. And they need a good performance to get that confidence back. And it's got to come Saturday, because if it doesn't, they're going to be 3-5.
They're going to be 3-5 and heading on to the road against a Rutgers team who's awful but might have figured something out last week. They put up 32 points at Minnesota, who's known for their defense. But who knows? It's a road game in the Big Ten. You lose that, and I think your season's over.
Get to Rutgers, they've got to
beat
Maryland.
I
mean, for me, it's a kitchen sink game. I've heard that term used by broadcasters, and to me, what it means is forget about the rest of the season. We've got to win this Saturday, and we're going to pull out whatever stop we have to do. I don't care if you say that's gimmicky or gadget plays or trick plays, however you want to say it. I don't care. The offensive game plan for me needs to be as innovative as it possibly can be. They need to use whatever means possible. I don't care if it's Vander Diamant. I don't care if it's Richard Legault. I don't care if it's Austin King. I don't care if it's Wildcat package stuff. Whatever game plan they decide is going to be the best mix of plays to use. They need to do it. They have to win this game Saturday.
You can't save anything. Save anything because this is a matchup opponent you have at home, and you need 6 wins. You're sitting at 3.
Yeah.
You have 3 games, winnable games left. And, you know, look, if you're that good at executing it, and if you show it on tape, if you're that kind of genius, it doesn't matter. But if you're scared that Rutgers or Purdue might pick up on something, you know, you can come up with a new game plan. You know, basic theory, throw out what you have and come out with something else. But to me, you know, maybe it's Legault's confidence. I thought he was a little rattled yesterday. When he dropped that snap is kind of when things were like, wrong?
That was on another – another poorly executed play. That was a really good play call I don't know if it's a really good play call, but it would have worked really well. I mean, they had it set up very nicely. It was going to go for a big game to Mitchell Page, and the snap gets dropped. And then your timing is completely off, and the throw was poor as a result. I mean, that was a perfect example to me of, hey, that play calling, while not perfect, that one right there would have worked. They had a couple of deep shots down the seam that would have worked. They were open, and the execution wasn't there. So for me, the play calling was good enough for them to win that game. The execution was not. And but I will say overall, all of it needs to be better for Saturday. I don't want to get completely negative because I do feel like the defense to me was so fun to see them respond. Yesterday's game wasn't fun. I'm not going to say that, but watching the defense
zero
respond
fun
to the start that they had, that part of it was fun because Northwestern's offense was, they had no clue
they
what
were humming
to do.
They had 352 yards of offense in the first half, and IU held them to
37
in the second half.
They ended with 408. The yardage was only 5 yards apart, as odd as that sounds. I mean,
I think there were in the second half, Northwestern drives, there were three out of the last four, and that includes the punt safety, were for negative yardage. They had a three-play negative 5 yards, four-play negative 6 yards. Look, it's
I thought it started with the rush defense. They did a much better job of locking down Justin Jackson. They started getting penetration. They did a much better job of setting the edge and making him string it along the sideline, like keeping him from putting his hip into the – and getting the edge. Indiana's defense started to get the edge themselves and just have him kind of running east and west as opposed to north and south, and then they made the tackles. It didn't start out that way, but it got that way pretty quick, and Jackson ended up with less than 100 yards, which at the start of the game, it looked like he was headed for like 200. But that was fun to watch for me. We're not just going to be entirely negative because the defensive performance doesn't deserve that.
No, and they play their hearts out, but to me it's how you start, and they started slow. Now a lot of it is feeling out. They haven't played Northwestern since 2012. You've seen them against Ohio. They played Ohio State every year since 2011. You've played Michigan every year since 2013 or 2012, stuff like that, where you get used to what these teams run. Northwestern, it's really a new team for this team to be playing. They don't play them next year and stuff like that. So that might go into a slow start, but they responded well. But, TJ, the final question of this podcast, do we have a quarterback controversy, and would you want to see somebody else play quarterback?
Look, if this week during practice, if you don't go into the game, I think that here's what I want to see. I want to see a petition this week throwing out what has happened so far. You have a quarterback competition for, I don't know, until maybe Wednesday or Thursday or something. Not sure exactly what their schedule is this week, but have that, determine who the starter is going to be Saturday. And then have it in your head that, look, if the offense isn't going, if it's not humming, we will make a change. I understand that having a quick trigger might damage a guy's confidence. There's not time for that anymore. If the offense is not working, yes, I want to see a change made.
Then.
Right, and if the offense is not working to start out, regardless of who is starting at quarterback, which I'm 99% sure it'll be Lego. If the offense is not working, and I don't care if you fall behind or not, if the offense isn't working after the first few drives, make a change, try to get it going. And I guess that would be my answer is, I'm not saying a change has to be made, but I really feel strongly that if things aren't going well at the beginning of the game on Saturday, the coaching staff needs to be ready to make that change pretty quickly. Because if you fall behind by more than a possession or two, it's probably going to be lights out against Maryland. because the offense has not shown the ability to put together multiple successful possessions in a row. So I guess that would be my opinion on it. I really think they have to figure out what to do in the red zone, because I feel very confident that they will beat Maryland and Rutgers and Purdue if they can get the red zone offense figured out. The offense is moving well enough between like the 25s or the 30s. It's getting, once they get down in there, things just like a light switch, that the power goes off. I think if they can somehow get that figured out, I feel good about those three games that I just listed. Are they going to do that? I don't see how you could have a huge level of confidence that they will, but I think that we'll see this week. We'll talk about it on the preview pod, but what we'll talk about on the preview pod is maybe two or three things we'd like to see done differently on offense, instead of just, you know, oh, it's got to be different. You know, I think we'll throw out two or three ideas a piece about kind of what we think might work differently down in the red zone to kind of turn around this. And I don't expect our ideas to get any traction with the coaching staff. I can say we offered some suggestions instead of just being critical, but there's no doubt that they've got to figure it out. The time for experimenting or the time for trying to round into form is over. The form's got to be there on Saturday.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the quarterback situation. Maybe you go with two quarterbacks to start, and, you know, Xander does give the ability to maybe spark the run game against Maryland and teams like Rutgers and Purdue. But I'd like to see – the guy I'd be interested to see throw the ball around was Austin King. Now, I don't know if he's 100% game ready. We haven't seen him since the middle or the end of August. But when we did see him, he threw a good ball. He threw accurately. He just was a little underdeveloped physically and maybe needed to mature a little bit more. But, you know, you're seven games in. You need this win. And he's already used, you know, he's been redshirted. Let's see what he's got.
And
don't forget about Danny Cameron. Apparently he's the guy who knows the offense best. Maybe he's the guy you throw in to make these throws. He doesn't have a terrible arm, but he knows the reads and, you know, maybe that'll cut out some of this running into an 8-man box when you only have 6 blockers. And things like that. So I think pulling Lego against FIU would have been silly. But you're in game 7 now. It's time to win. And I'll put it bluntly, you got to win this one. This is an absolute must-win game for Indiana football. It's at home against a team that, you know, has struggled on the road a little bit. As you know, come back down from earth from their big start. Now they're a good football team, but you've got to think that playing at home means something. And you know, putting together that stinker of a performance yesterday would fire up this team to not replicate that performance on Saturday. But anyway, TJ, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us on the Sunday. Enjoy the rest of the NFL afternoon. It's a gorgeous fall day here in Indianapolis, and we'll talk on Wednesday.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking forward to that preview pod, and we'll have great coverage. Well, I guess great is up to the person that's reading it, but in our opinion, it's pretty good. We'll have coverage of the upcoming Maryland game and recapping more of what happened in a pretty interesting week in the Big Ten, and then we'll have the preview pod on Wednesday where we will – I'm sure, come up with some brilliant ideas to help Indiana win on Saturday.
Yep, score more points than the other team.
There you go.
That's my brilliant suggestion. Score more points than the other team. That's how you win football games. Anyway, keep coming back to HoosierHuddle.com. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. We thanks for your comments and your readership. And I know it's a tough time now, and basketball starting up. So we appreciate your attention and your readership. So keep coming back, and have a great Sunday and a great rest of the week until Wednesday.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs. A gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I normally find bras to be so uncomfortable and constricting, but Skims has changed that. You know I love Skims underwear, so I finally tried their bras, and Skims has delivered again. Skims bras are worth the hype for the amazing shape and support they give, but what I wasn't expecting was how comfortable they are too. I've tried so many bras in the past, and the main issue that I have is that they weren't supportive enough, to the point where they felt slouchy. I love my Skims wireless form bra because it's so comfortable and supportive. The older I get, the more I care about actually being comfortable in what I wear every day. And with my wireless form bra, I no longer have to sacrifice my comfort for the support I need. Shop Skims bras at Skims.com, now available in 62 sizes, 30A to 46H. Plus, get free shipping on all orders over $75. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows.